Oh, that is sad. Okay, this is 29th of September 2010, looking at org culture and org structure, and I'm going to run out of batteries here. So we're going to spend the first part of the class doing some more work with org culture. And in fact, half your meetings is doing more on org culture than on org structure. So first, we're going to do some stuff from yesterday. I had this that I asked you to work on. So there's more than one way of categorizing organizational culture. And what was the main way we looked at yesterday? We're looking at how much an organization is what or what? And also? Okay. What's an organization that's flexible and external? The culture is called what? Flexible and internal. Stable and internal. Stable and external. What's the organizing principles for this? Bureaucracy means what? What's the principle?
Top down power.
Formality.
Rules.
Follow the rules. Organizing principle for family.
Follow the norms.
What's the difference between norms and rules?
Rules are written down. And I guess rules are kind of hard.
They're hard.
They're a lot compromising.
They're written down in a book, right? What are norms?
Like cultural behaviors and
accepted culture.
Suggestions.
Traditions.
And not the punishment, but like a suggestion.
Well, there may be kind of social punishment.
It'd probably be easier to get around the norm.
Than to get around the rules. I'd say that norms have to do more with principles. Things like respect. Such as respect. Whereas rules have things to do more with where do you put your shoes.
Difference in self-respect?
No, I'm giving as a principle. A principle of society would be respect, responsibility. Truthfulness. So follow the norms means things like be truthful, be responsible, be respectful, be helpful. Those are norms. And rules would be things like you have to be here at 3:30.
It implies some more respect in a sense for itself. The rules are practical and normal.
They're the idea behind norms are the ideas behind rules. Rules are very, very specific application of norms.
The norms give us like the chance to kind of follow the rules, but
right. I mean, remember, what's the difference between these two? What's the difference between family and bureaucracy? They're both internal, but what's the difference? One is more flexible. One is more stable. This is exactly what you have to do. This is the principle that you have to follow. Okay, Adhocracy, what's the guiding principle?
Do what it takes.
Do what it takes. And what for market?
Keep your promises.
Keep promises. And what's the goal of the market?
Out-compete.
Out-compete to win. The goal of Adhocracy. Exactly. Getting the most done for the least cost. Getting the most done for the least cost. Market and Adhocracy may you may not be as concerned about cost. All right, let's look at Varnas. Let's go back and look at Varnas. I'd like you to think deeply for a moment, really, really, really deeply about the four Varnas. And what each of them protects. Brahmins produce, do Brahmins protect what?
Knowledge.
Kshatriyas protect what?
People.
Vaishyas protect what?
Cows.
Animals.
Land.
Natural resources. And the Sudras?
The arts, crafts,
skills.
Arts and skills. Where are you going to see the most flexibility, you think? Who in the Varnas is going to display the most flexibility, and who's going to display the most wanting security and stability? Yeah.
Shudras want security.
They're really going to want security. Remember, it's Shudras who really want to have a job with an income. Somebody's going to take care of them. And give them a job and pay them a salary. All they have to worry about is doing their job. Of course, some higher level shudras may have their own crafts thing, their own crafts business, where people are coming and buying and they're not getting a set salary. Okay. So, which of these do you feel? Let's look at the kshatriyas first. Which organizational culture do you think the kshatriyas are going to like?
Clan.
What do you think the Shudras are going to like?
Bureaucracy.
Safe. This is the rule. You know what's supposed to be done. If you do that, you get a reward. If you don't do that, you get punished. Everything's clear. Everything's stable. Everything's secure. What are the Vaishyas going to like?
Market.
They want to win over all the competition. And what are the Brahmins going to like?
Adhocracy.
Adhocracy gives you the most individual freedom to innovate, to come up with your own commentary, to be unique. So if you have a society mostly of brahmanas, they're going to want an adhocracy culture. If you've got a society run by kshatriyas, they're going to want to have a clan or family culture. If you have a society run by vaishyas, they're going to want a market culture. If you have a society run by shudras, they're going to want a bureaucratic culture. Does this make some sense as to why Srila Prabhupada says that as soon as you have a bureaucracy, everything is spoiled? You all read that, right? I hope you all read that.
He said we shoot the pot in the beginning, or
closed.
Say the close, that a closed society may be useful. Close a little bit.
What is a closed society exactly?
We'll get there. It's a different way of looking at society. It's a very different lens. Just like we can look at an individual through the lens of their emotional maturity, we can look at an individual through the lens of their spiritual development, through their physical characteristics, through their social role, and those are very different lenses, and we'll come up with very different explanations about a person. So we can look at society also through many different lenses. Okay, so right now what we've looked at is one model. This is not the only model, but this is a typical model. This is the most accepted model out in the world. And there, as I say, there are others. But we can certainly see how this relates to the Varnas, and we can also certainly see how it relates to ISKCON. You can see that if we have, to whatever extent we have a bureaucratic culture, also people feel they're not being cared for, because if you're trying to get things done with the least amount of cost, where is one place you're going to cut costs? People, taking care of people. So you can see that, I mean, in this one, I may be concerned with people, but I'm concerned more with preaching and teaching rather than caring for people. Here I'm concerned with winning. So, you know, in winning you may sacrifice people. And here I'm concerned with efficiency and following the rules. I'm not concerned with applying the rules to individuals. And if I'm concerned with efficiency, and if I'm concerned getting the job done with the least amount of cost, then one big cost is people. People are a huge amount of cost. In a school, 80% of the cost is taking care of the teachers in a regular school. I'm sure that's not true in a Hare Krishna school. In a government school, 80% of the cost is the teacher's salaries. Other people's salaries. So if you want to be really efficient, what are you going to do? This is what's happening in modern society, which is very much run by vaishyas and shudras. Cut jobs. Mechanized jobs. Factories. Factories are a good example of efficiency. Get the job done with the least amount of cost. And if that means that you've got to damage people, well, so be it. Any of you ever seen the movie Stuff? It's a small movie, about 20 minutes. And how the real cost of a lot of the things we buy is that somebody's being exploited somewhere. You know, the reason that you get something cheaply is that somebody in some part of the world is creating that item with dangerous chemicals, without health care, and so forth and so forth. So the actual cost is being hidden. But you don't care because you're getting things at the lowest possible cost. All right. I hope it's okay with you that in this class we bring up things that are a little uncomfortable. Okay. I mean, I think this is a little uncomfortable, looking at this kind of stuff. Well, as I was saying before, when we looked at stratification, that the main complaints people have about the culture of ISKCON is the lack of care, the lack of keeping promises, the lack of caring, right? Lack of ethics is going to be also high. Now, what can we do before we go into your homework? So, you know, every organization is going to have some of each of these cultures in them. And, of course, there can also be subcultures within an organization. So you can have some parts of an organization that had each of these cultures. But what would be the ideal situation for ISKCON as a whole? We're saying we have a tendency to have to a large extent an autocracy. I don't think we have an autocracy structure. I think there's a tension between our organizational structure and our organizational culture. If we're going to have a society, who is an autocracy culture going to work for? Who's going to be able to function best in an autocracy culture?
People who are like ambitious.
Brahmins.
Okay.
That's your realm of ultimate creativity and freedom. Autonomy. So what would be the ideal culture for ISKCON? How would ISKCON be set up in such a way that we really had an ideal culture?
Mixture of autocracy and clan and bureaucracy and
how would it look like?
Our option system.
Well, explain that to me in terms of organizational culture.
We have all
in different parts.
All of them in different
parts. We have people taking care of people, like the chapter is taking care of the people, the Brahmins are taking care of the innovation, and then the
like it's implying we see that everything is basically necessary for different types of people. So we first have to identify the people, who is what, or what kind of people are what, then put them in an organization that works for them. Because right now we have everyone under Brahminical standards basically, and not everyone's Brahmin. Although Prabhupada wants us to be Brahmins, we're not necessarily
able to
reach that.
And what's quote a sort of organizational culture is being pushed from the top.
Bureaucracy.
What we're definitely getting from the top is more emphasis on rules. And it's interesting because those people don't want to live in that kind of culture themselves. At all. Not at all.
There's space for another one to be formed or to be there, like a different.
Could you have one where the others were under it?
Yeah, because like I don't see in case bureaucracy where it's possible
no.
to have anything under that.
That's right. You're right. That's a drag. So, I really like that.
But so I would say like if you start with one, which is able to have the other one under it, and that one is able to have that one under it, and that one is able to have the other.
You are brilliant. You're absolutely correct. I'm so happy I'm teaching this. Alright, well, if something's going to have other things under it, then it has to have the highest degree of what?
Flexibility.
Flexibility. So the only thing that's going to be able to have other things under it is something that has a very high degree of flexibility. And if we're going to look at in terms of protection, if problems are protecting knowledge, that's knowledge for everybody. Knowledge about everything. Knowledge about people, knowledge about natural resources and animals, knowledge about arts and skills. Everything's under that. And if you're taking care of people, well, people take care of the resources and the animals and the arts and the skills, so that's under that. And if you're taking care of, I'm not sure to what extent the vices protect the sutras directly. Some extent. But I think it's more than the kshatriyas protect both the vaishyas and the shudras. If you don't have kshatriyas, just like when the West industrialized, one of the main problems was that the vaishyas were exploiting the sutras much worse than before. Industrialization allowed for much more horrific exploitation of people. So I think we could do what we got. If this include this, which can then include these things. Now, what will most people in the society experience? What kind of culture would most people, if that was set up? Like that? No. They mostly experience this. Because that would be their main visible leaders who are running the society. Because the brahmanas wouldn't be engaged directly in administering the society. The only places where you'd be, where you directly experience this, would be where? Where would you experience nearly a pure form of this?
In an ashram or a temple.
Yeah, an ashram or a school, or a temple. A temple where there's just, it's just like a monastery, not a temple where it's a village. That'd be the only place you'd pretty much just experience this. If you were basically with a group of brahmanas, you'd experience an anhakrasi culture. And everyone else in society would feel that the main culture was a family culture. That would be the dominant culture that they'd be aware of. Although in terms of their occupation, if a bunch of vaishyas were getting together, they would have an organizational culture, a market culture. And even if you were dealing with shudras and put them into, okay, these are the rules, this is, you've got to be here on time, and you've got to do this, and you've got to do that. There would be still an overarching family culture that was taking care of people. It wouldn't be just a bureaucracy. So if ISKCON is to be a society, which ISKCON has not yet, in my humble opinion, become a society. A lot of the reasons that we're grappling with this is we really have not become a society. We're something, as Chara Prabhu was saying, we're a federation of temples. I mean, this is one of Shiva Ramaraj's points that he makes over and over again, is ISKCON needs to become a society, not just a federation of temples. And you know, how do you do that? So I know his slide about divorce was a little funny, but you know, we have a lot of people that are really working to figure out how in the world do we set up a society. Now, how specifically to do this? I don't know. But at least we have some beginning blueprint. And I think this is valuable because, frankly, I don't see very many people who are really giving the blueprint for this. I don't see very many people who are even thinking about these things. It would be nice. One difficulty is that at the GBC level, there seems to be a belief that the role of the GBC is stability and efficiency. So they seem to believe that that's their job. And I don't know how well you know people on the GBC, but the people on the GBC don't generally like going to GBC meetings, for example. So, because what happens at the GBC meetings, what kind of organizational culture do you think pervades a GBC meeting? In the meetings themselves, what do you think is the culture?
Bureaucracy.
Bureaucracy. Drives them nuts. their job, is to promote stability, to promote rule following and stability. They see that as their role in ISKCON. There's a lot of work that Jai Krishnaprabhu has done on the succession committee looking, and one of the things we've looked at is a job description of the GBC, and that's not what Prabhupada describes. He's not describing the role of rules and stability at all. But I think when we think in terms of management, you know, when Prabhupada's will says the GBC is the ultimate management, managing authority, we think in terms of a factory. Bureaucracy is not trying to out-compete everybody, nor be innovative. It's just trying to maintain their niche. Remember, we're looking at that mission? Just to have a niche. Mm-hmm. Let's have our niche and let's just maintain. Okay. Find this interesting?
Yes.
Yes.
In a way, even though not in society today, and the world has gone, you know, through all societies in the last 1,000 years or something, it does seem like they sort of follow the system. Maybe not the qualified people are in the right position, but you know, you take the example of the kings who did try and take care of their population who were in that system, they're only good kings when they listen to their advisors, who generally could be considered in this case as the Brahmanas, maybe not spiritually, at least intellectually. And that whole scheme would be followed in a sense. And even today, it still kind of is.
Well, today, it's talked about.
Yeah.
So the politicians talk about caring for people. They talk about putting people first. They talk about their society as if it's a family. Did the leaders of ISKCON do the same thing? Just like you saw in that PowerPoint by Charu. And again, I want to emphasize, I have no idea whether or not he actually does that there. I have only visited there once a few years ago for 2 days, so I don't have any idea. But if you saw it, he emphasized that it's going to be like a family. He said very clearly it's not going to be a bureaucracy. Right? And it was really, really clear. It's not going to be a bureaucracy. It's not going to be a bunch of rules. There's not going to be a bunch of hierarchies. Is going to be very much family. So that's what we say. We say to people, if you join ISKCON, our society will be like a family. And then, of course, people get disappointed because in many cases it's not. I'd say in most cases it's not. And then we have this preaching that it's a bureaucracy, and we have stuff coming from the top that, you know, it's got to be a bureaucracy, and you've got to follow the rules. And membership is determined by how much you're following the rules of the GBC. If you're a member, you will follow the rules of the GBC. But that's not how ISKCON's running. ISKCON's not running like that. The ISKCON organization is running much more like this. I think there's several reasons why ISKCON's running more like this, because there are a lot of Brahmins who are still calling shots in actuality, and even most of the people who are saying it's your bureaucracy don't themselves live like that. They don't live like that, they don't. You know, we're talking in a minute about what the leaders do for organizational culture. They don't really do things to promote that. Nor do they personally set that example. And as soon as they're in that kind of atmosphere, they're unhappy. They can't wait to go home and get out of the meetings, you know, where they can't breathe. But we do have some sort of sense that we're supposed to be like this. You know, oh yeah, we're supposed to. I mean, we certainly have some element in this kind that does this. That our goal is to outcompete all the other religious groups in the world and win over everybody. Right. an answer. I don't have an answer. But I think it would be good to meditate on how to do this. And what would be really nice is if we could... I was really, really meditating. This is funny. If we could present to the leader some sort of a game plan. What I see, and I know many of people in top positions, what I see is that, I don't know, a few of them, but generally most of them don't like their own bureaucracy at all. They find ways to get away from their own bureaucracy. And they don't like the role that they're taking in society, and they don't know what role they're supposed to have. And they don't know what game plan to do it. And I've talked to a number of people about setting up more of an adhocracy, and they all feel, well, that's scary. And I, you know, looking at this, I realize that that is really scary if you try to do it for everybody. You really can't put everybody in that place. It's too scary for most people. They can't function like that.
You got a better in practical ways in this film, how would that implementing the adhocracy affect them? And now the bureaucracy is
We have a bureaucracy. We have to some extent. We have officially a bureaucracy. Again, here we're talking about culture, not structure. So we're going to get to structure in a few minutes. ISKCON has, at least in theory, a highly bureaucratic structure.
We're talking about structure or
this is culture. This is culture, not structure. You should have a match between culture and structure. That should match.
But luckily it doesn't match in this case.
Luckily it doesn't. And it was maybe a couple years ago, it was not that long ago, that I realized that it really doesn't match. And that, well, as soon as I realized that, because there was a long time that I was, just speaking for myself personally, that I was very frightened by the fact that I felt that ISKCON had a bureaucratic structure. I was actually terrified. And then what I've come to see is that it doesn't really have a bureaucratic culture. They're just, except in some places and in some aspects of ISKCON, but other than in some places and at some times in some aspects, the majority of the culture of ISKCON is not bureaucratic. And therefore, we're a thriving, living movement. And then I was like, oh. The person who's really running the show is Lord Chaitanya. We're not running it. He's running it. The structure is how you set up who's responsible to whom, who has power, how things are supposed to work. It's like building. Structure is like a building. Culture is what goes on inside the building. Now, ideally, you should have a building that is built, that is what we call purpose-built. Just like in ISKCON, sometimes we build a temple, and other times we buy a building that was built for another purpose, and we adapt it. So like this is an example of a building that was bought for another purpose, and it was adapted. Now, if we were to build our own building, my guess is that we would build it differently. You know, if you go to temples that were designed by devotees, or shall we say intelligently designed by devotees, because not everything designed by everybody is done intelligently, and then you'll see it's purpose-built. I mean, for example, I was just in Hungary at New Vrajdam at the farm, and that's a very purpose-built temple. So it's got, first of all, a huge temple room. It's absolutely huge. It's big enough for almost everybody to fit when there's a festival. Then there's another little temple room for Nisingadeva. The pujaris have lockers to keep their things. The pujaris also have bathrooms with showers. And it's really cool. If you go into the pujaris' bathrooms, there's one big room for dressing and stuff that has lockers. The pujaris can keep their things. Then there's a separate room for the toilet and shower, but there's a door also from the toilet room into the shower.
So you don't have to go from the toilet room into the main room and then into the shower. So you actually keep the main room totally separate from the toilet room. And yeah, that's a purpose-built building. It was built to facilitate the specific desires that devotees have, the specific lifestyles devotees have. You know, generally, not always, when devotees build a temple, they build some place to protect the shoes. I mean, in Hungary, there isn't really a place, a small place in the front to protect the shoes. I lived at a temple in America for 16 years where there was no place to protect the shoes when it rained. I mean, nothing. We had to, and you went right into the temple room. There was no entranceway at all. You opened the door and you were in the temple room. So you had to, when it was raining, and it rained there a lot, you'd have to open the door, not put your shoes on the floor. You kind of have to have one foot, it's pouring rain. You have to have a plastic bag, and you kind of put one shoe in the bag. Then you hop into the temple on that foot, and then you take your shoe and put it in the other bag. And it took years of harassing and nagging the leaders before they put something up in the shoes. Years. Oh, at least 10 years. But generally, shoe place inauguration. It wasn't even a great shoe place. At least it had a roof. We didn't get walls. We got a roof. It was an improvement. But anyway, my point is that generally, not always, when we build a building, it's purpose-built, which means that the form follows function. Which is, you saw that quote I had from the famous architect, that in nature, form follows function. My hands have a particular function, therefore they have a particular form. Birds fly, so they have an arm that has a flying form. Form follows function. Whatever function you have, your form should follow that function. And if you have a mismatch between form and function, things are a little difficult. So in ISKCON, we have an unclear organizational culture. When we're preaching two people to join, we tell them that we have a family culture. After you join, you're told we have a bureaucratic culture. Could you imagine if we had a membership PowerPoint to get people, like I was saying, you'd never use Shiva Raghavarsha's PowerPoint to get people to join ISKCON. Come join ISKCON and join the bureaucracy. You know, no way. And we look at Charu's PowerPoint and we say, I wonder how much is really like that. You know, how much of this is propaganda and how much of this is actually... Because we've had a lot of experience that we kind of get Charu's PowerPoint before we join and then we get Shiva Ramarja's after we join. You know, so that those are the things that we're told. And I want to emphasize that I like both of those devotees. They're wonderful devotees. We're talking about how difficult it is to understand what is ISKCON membership. And then when you're actually in ISKCON, after a while you kind of figure out that it's an autocracy. Which is lovely if you're a Brahmana. If you're a Brahmana and you don't really care about having a regulated income. Because you live on charity and you live on whatever Krishna sends. And knowing that you're going to be taken care of is not really important. You know Krishna's going to take care of you. You're not looking for an organization to take care of you. So if you're a Brahmana, you want a lot of freedom. You want a lot of freedom to innovate. You want a lot of freedom to explore the Shastra, as Prabhupada says, from many angles of vision. You definitely don't want to be in a bureaucracy, which is the opposite. You might tolerate being a family. You're not going to tolerate being in the bureaucracy. That's too much. You've got to have at least that amount of flexibility. So for the people who are Brahmanas, they may flourish in the autocracy culture, especially the Brahmin renunciates. Some even in the Brahmin householders may have a little bit of difficulty, because the Kshatriyas are also supposed to protect the Brahmanas. Brahmanas are also people. Kshatriyas are also supposed to make sure the Brahmanas are fed and clothed and taken care of. And especially, you know, if you're a Brahmana renunciate living out in the forest in a cave, well, who cares?
God's giving me my food, and what's the problem? Right? But you can see that the majority of people are going to feel very uncomfortable in an autocracy culture. They're going to feel unprotected, because they are. They're going to feel unprotected, they're going to feel unstable, they're going to feel that there's not any security. By the way, my purpose in this class, and remember, I didn't ask for this class to exist or even ask to teach it. So it's given to me. Hey, would you teach this class? But my own personal purpose in this class is to look at the situation honestly, to try to see the situation honestly, try to understand our ISKCON through a sociological lens, not just through a spiritual lens. In this class, we are not primarily looking at ISKCON through a spiritual lens. We are not particularly looking at the CON part, KCON part. So generally, Urmila Devidasi in her classes concentrates on the KCON part. That's my main focus. But there's also the S part. So we're looking at society now. You understand what all of us are talking about? ISKCON. So I see that there's also a tendency in ISKCON, at least the classes that I hear by leaders, that they're really focusing on that part also. Personal sadhana, personal realization, personal meditation, japa retreats, etc. Which is very needed and very wonderful. In this particular class, we're focusing on this part right here. How do I see ISKCON as a society? So I'm looking at, through the lens of society. The lens of society means I'm looking at the lens of society through the materialist, material sociologists, the non-devotee sociologists, and then the lens of society through our own shastra as much as I can. And saying, where are we now? How would we categorize and understand ISKCON as a society now? Where would we like to go and how would we like to get there? All right, how would we like to get there? Was to your homework assignment.
I didn't understand.
We understand. Why'd you ask me? I'm not hiding. I'm very accessible.
At 2 o'clock I
started. Oh, well, that'll do it. I was accessible at 2. I was not accessible from 2:20 to 2:45. I was sleeping.
Maybe if you would ask when you're accessible.
I'm basically accessible, people. I'm basically accessible. From teaching 2 classes a day and preparing for 2 classes a day, I had to take a nap today because my brain was dead.
I can't say I didn't do my homework because I tried.
Well, that's all I ask.
Finish.
I don't ask that you get it perfect. I just ask that you try.
Okay. I don't get it perfect. When do I get it perfect? I've never gotten anything perfect. Yes?
I was just thinking about the different... how I describe this going to people. Because you're like, we tell people this, and I'm like, I tell people that we're a clan.
Yeah.
I say that. And then... especially at our temple in Hawaii, I mean, for me, it's quite clan-like.
In that one temple.
My family and then everybody else, and, you know, it's not very... So I always felt that. Then I would travel, and I was traveling too, and I'm like, maybe I'm lying, but not. Maybe, you know, it's understandable. And I'm just wondering, like, I was always thinking, people just see ISKCON how, you know, whatever perspective they want to see it through, and that's kind of how it is. Some people would say other things.
Could you imagine anybody making propaganda about joining ISKCON because it's a bureaucracy? Could you imagine us ever doing that? I can't imagine our joining propaganda. You know, it's just like the military. Oh, there was an old song, I don't know,
yeah, kids.
Join the Navy and see the world. But what did I see? I saw the sea. I saw the Atlantic and the Pacific. But the Pacific's not so terrific. Join the Navy and see the world. What did I see? I saw the sea.
So,
you know, I just can't imagine us going out to people and saying, join our bureaucracy. Join our bureaucratic religious institution. Now, I do believe that there are some people who are attracted to joining a bureaucracy. I think there are some people who are attracted to joining a bureaucracy. In one of the challenges for me teaching two classes in the same week and having some of the same students in both classes and preparing for both classes, you know, I'll be preparing, because I taught the history class so much, I don't have to do nearly as much preparation for that. So, you know, preparing for the society class before I teach the history class, and then preparing for the history class before I teach the society class. Ah! Sometimes I can't remember what I taught in which class. I believe it's in the history class. That I make the point that ISKCON is seen differently by different people. Was that in the history class?
Both.
Or was that in this class? Did I do that too?
Both.
Did I talk about seeing what the movement is, Divine Leela? Did I talk about that in this class?
No.
In history class? You don't know what you're doing. That's really helpful. Well, the people who are only in this class, did I talk about people seeing this class as Divine Leela? This class is Divine Leela.
Oh, no, it was
no,
this class.
I need more sleep. Seeing this class is Divine Leela.
Oh, I see it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it wasn't this class.
I haven't even got recorded. How embarrassing.
No.
Okay. Was that this class?
This class.
No. No. Okay, the very beginning. In the first class. So it must have been history. So in the first class I talked about how people, in the first history class, that people see ISKCON in many different ways. That there's some experience it. Some devotees experience ISKCON as being in Divine Leela. Other people experience ISKCON as a human organization.
No,
that was this class.
No, history is class.
History class.
Yes, I have it in my notes, history is class.
History.
I just know you didn't
yeah,
say that.
Yeah.
I didn't say that here. Okay, well, I'm going to say it now. There we go. We'll say it now. That there are people who see ISKCON as a human organization. There are people who see ISKCON as a vehicle. And then there are people who experience. Not, I'm not talking about theoretically what people say ISKCON. I'm talking about what people actually experience. Then the people who experience ISKCON as if they're part of Krishna's pastimes. They're actually experiencing that being in ISKCON means being in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. And those who experience ISKCON as a vehicle, they may see it as a vehicle for pleasing Srila Prabhupada, they may see it as a vehicle for preaching, for the Sankirtan movement, or they may see it as a vehicle for their own personal spiritual advancement, or some combination of the three, or all three. This is a way to please Prabhupada, this is a way for me to make advancement, this is a way for me to preach. Or they may see being in ISKCON as part of being in Krishna's Leela. Or they may see it as a human organization. And as a human organization, I can think of at least two ways to see it. One is as a church, as a bureaucratic church. This is where I go to perform my religious rituals. My guess is that most people who see ISKCON like that are Hindus. That's my guess. But I would imagine that there are many non-Hindus who also see ISKCON like that. This is where I go on Sunday. This is where I engage in my religion. We had one devotee a year or so ago who kind of moved away in many ways. She told me her faith was really damaged. And she said, well, Krishna consciousness is still my faith. It's still my religion. But I have a lot of other interests. So, and she wasn't Hindu. So I think that can be, as devotees told me once in Bhaktivedanta Manor, that Hindus and non-Hindus is not by skin color and ethnicity. We said there's a lot of Indians that are full-on devotees, and there's a lot of white people who are Hindus. But in other words, people who take Krishna consciousness as their religion. They may see ISKCON as a human organization that's set up like any other church, any other bureaucratic church. And then there are people who see ISKCON as a business. They see ISKCON as a place to get a job, to get status, to get food, maybe to get a visa for a Western country, if they're in a third world country. And they interpret the actions of other people that way, also. I tend to see other people as I am. You know, if I'm a pure devotee, I tend to think everybody's a pure devotee, kind of thing. And if I see ISKCON as a competitive, cutthroat business where people are in it for status, then I tend to think that's what's motivating everybody else. So So those who spend a lot of time criticizing ISKCON in that way, that's really how they see ISKCON. I think ISKCON is a human organization meant for status and prestige and security. So, because there are certainly people, I have no idea what the percentage is, but it's a goodly number of people who see ISKCON as a human organization that's meant for status and prestige and money. So, those people might actually be happy in your bureaucracy. But even those people don't make propaganda that ISKCON's the bureaucracy. Not Jim.
For me, it's always been weird when, this kind of definition of ISKCON comes about, that there are many definitions, and people are like, no, that's impossible, there can be, that people come for business, with this. And then I think, you learn from the Bhagavad Gita that people come to religion
exactly.
For so many reasons.
That's right.
So to see it as other, it just seems naturally that it would
Thank
color.
You. Thank you. That's very well put. So Krishna gives four reasons why people come. We could probably analyze those here too. Krishna gives four reasons why people come, and Prabhupada says many, many times that people come to ISKCON. People come to Krishna for different reasons. I mean, we know that. We should know that.
Mm-hmm.
And that people see Krishna in different ways. I mean, the wrestlers saw Krishna one way, the yogis saw Krishna another way, the members of the Yadu dynasty saw. They're all looking at the same Krishna, but they're seeing him according to their own mentality.
Why do people stay?
Probably stay for different reasons. I mean, again, when we say stay, we're asking why do they stay in ISKCON. We're not saying asking why do people stay practicing Krishna consciousness. Those two are not exactly the same. Can you stay in ISKCON and not be practicing Krishna consciousness?
No.
Yes.
Shouldn't be.
You shouldn't be able to, but can you?
If there's four definitions, then
if
it's possible two that you could come to.
Can you stay in ISKCON and not be practicing Krishna consciousness?
Well, if practicing the four principles.
Well, we've got plenty of people who aren't practicing the four principles. What universe do you live in?
No, but if they're not practicing the four
I mean, that's actually.
I don't think we have a lot, we don't have a lot of core members who are not vegetarians. We have a lot of community members who are not vegetarians.
What?
All over the world.
You said 30% of you.
30% of the people teaching in this kind of schools are not.
But they're also devotees. Or are they just people who
are? But they're working in this kind of project. But if you're going to, if you look at Charu's membership map and you're going to include people who just come for Jamasthami and Diwali, I'm sure that they're not all vegetarians. For sure. For sure. Not all those people are vegetarians. Absolutely for sure. There are many people who visit ISKCON temples, at least occasionally. Maybe not regularly, but at least occasionally. Who are probably not following any of the regular principles. I know some personally. So that's rare. That's rare. There are some.
There are some.
I've met some. That's rare, though. My experience. I haven't done a study. No, there are some. But I'd say most of the people that we're dealing with who eat meat, who come to the temples, are not anybody who was originally in this general. They're just people whose involvement is still outside. You could definitely be a member of ISKCON and not be following the other three. There are lots of people who are members of ISKCON on one level or another and are not following the other three principles. We have a lot of people who are members and don't chant 16 minutes. Don't we? I mean,
yeah.
I knew one Pujari who said he only chanted 16 minutes a day on Jamasthami. So could you be a member of ISKCON and not be very Krishna conscious? You have to be slightly Krishna conscious to be a member of ISKCON. I mean, you have to have some moderate, slight, occasional consciousness of Krishna to be a member of ISKCON. You'd have to at least come into Anastami and say, hey, there's Krishna.
At the beginning, the self-adapt is pretty good.
Excuse me?
At the beginning, when a person is not very well aware, that half is for devotees. Sometimes the only thing that keeps a person coming back to the temple or having more contact is through person who is
a relationship.
Some relationship.
Who is who's serious in Krishna consciousness
and
supports that person.
Yes,
there's no other. There's faith is not strong enough. So there's
But they might be coming for another reason. They might be coming for the persona. They might be coming because they just enjoy the singing and dancing and the music. So I don't think there's only one reason. But that's certainly a strong one. So anyway, you could be in this kind of not be very Krishna conscious. And could you be Krishna conscious and not be in this kind? Okay, so when you say staying, do you mean staying in Krishna consciousness, or do you mean staying in ISKCON, when you ask why do people stay?
These people, they come.
No, wait, first I'm asking you. You said, why do people stay? Is that stay where? Stay in Krishna consciousness or stay in ISKCON? Those are not equivalent. What was your question? Is your question, why do people stay in ISKCON, or is your question, why do people stay in Krishna consciousness?
Why do people continue associating with devotees who are Krishna conscious in this
way? Why do people keep up a relationship with you? That's your question.
With members who are right to see Krishna conscious.
With members, it might be because it's their kid. I'm sure that there's 100 different reasons why you might keep up a relationship with somebody who happens to be a member of ISKCON. It might
then
be your employee.
Then why not?
It might be your kid. So, but I don't think that's actually the question.
Then why not keeping your relationship with ISKCON or with your ship on any remote?
But I don't think that's. I don't understand why you even want to know the answer to that. In other words, lots of people have a relationship with devotees. I may continue to have a relationship with a devotee who's a member of ISKCON because they're a customer at my shop. But I don't think that's your question.
The point is that it's the most essential, because when you have someone
what's the most essential?
A little bit interested, who's
what?
Coming.
You said it's the most essential. What's the most essential?
That someone who is a little bit interested, that such a person is properly accepted and encouraged to continue.
I think you're talking about a lot of different things, or else you're not really clarifying what you're thinking about.
Just practical. Someone comes to the temple several times, and then, you know, what do you do with that person? Just ignore.
So you're asking about how to keep people staying in ISKCON, or staying to have some connection with ISKCON. Is that what you're asking? I'm trying to clarify what you're asking.
Both. Why would there be, if someone we want,
because there's a difference.
We want a person to stay in both in contact with Krishna consciousness practicing and in contact with ISKCON.
Okay, so why would people do it? We're going to look in our last class about how to preserve ISKCON itself. And why do people keep, I think it's two different reasons. I think why people continue to stay in Krishna consciousness is a different answer than why people continue to stay in ISKCON, although I think there's some overlap. I think people continue to stay in Krishna consciousness because they have some faith that Krishna, that practicing Krishna consciousness is going to give them what they want. I think it's very simple. Why do we do anything? We do anything that we do because we have some faith that doing what we do is going to give us something that we want and something that we need. So, that's why we continue any behavior. That faith may be foolish. If I think that drinking alcohol is going to give me happiness, and so I keep drinking alcohol, then I have a foolish faith. But whatever I do, according to Bhagavad Gita, is based upon some faith. And it's faith that this activity or this mode is going to get me what I want. And then you could say the same is true for ISKCON. Why do people remain members of ISKCON? Because they have some faith that remaining a member of ISKCON is going to give them something that they want. Now, for some people, that something that they want is going to be that I want to myself, I'm remaining a member of ISKCON because I feel that ISKCON is the best way available to me to become Krishna conscious. Or I'm staying a member of ISKCON because I feel it's the best way for me to keep a connection with Srila Prabhupada, which is probably very much connected to how I think I want to become Krishna conscious. Or I'm keeping a connection with ISKCON because I feel that that's the best way I can preach. It's the best vehicle for preaching. Or I'm keeping a part of ISKCON because I'm already realized that I'm in Krishna's Leela and I see that this is how Krishna wants me to participate in his Leela on the earth. Or I'm keeping a member of ISKCON because this is how I can practice my religion. This is how I can practice my culture and my religion. Or I'm keeping in ISKCON because this is where, you know, I have a job. And this is where I have some status. And this is where I have my maintenance. and there may be some other reasons.
But do we provide for the society provides for this?
For what?
For all this.
Well, obviously.
Because.
So that should it or does it?
If it is.
Yes, of course.
If there's some room for someone who like is coming and needs a job.
Do we do that? Of course, we maintain people. Is
education. Some people want education. Some people want, you know, good association.
Well, of course. Do we do that to the degree that we want to, or in the way that we want to, or where we want to?
Is this more spontaneous, or is it organized? Or do we interview a person what they want?
Well, I like your use of the word spontaneous and organized. Let's just go back here. Let's go back here. I really like the fact that you use the word spontaneous.
Oh, I use the word spontaneous.
Use the word spontaneous and use the word organized. You said, is it more spontaneous or is it more organized? So when Prabhupada was asked by George Harrison, and George Harrison said, I don't like organized religion, and Prabhupada said, religion must be very organized. So what do we often think of when we think of organized? Bureaucracy or market. So one thing we're going to look at soon. If life goes how I want to go, which it does. One thing we're going to look at soon is that there's more than one way to organize. That there isn't a dichotomy between spontaneous and organized. Because when you use these words, is it spontaneous or is it organized? And I believe that duality is a lot of the problem and a lot of the difficulty with having an organization, an organizational structure in ISKCON that supports the organizational culture we want to have. We want to have a culture that's spontaneous. I mean, at least Prabhupada said so. He said, be careful not to kill the spirit of enthusiastic service. I put that quote in here. I must have put that quote in there. Be careful not to kill the spirit of enthusiastic service, which is individual, spontaneous, and voluntary. Prabhupada wanted an organizational culture of spontaneous. Spontaneous is another word for flexible. He wanted an organizational culture that was spontaneous. And then he also said that ISKCON has to be organized, that religion has to be organized. And he said, don't do a bureaucracy or you'll ruin everything. So my little teeny logical brain puts that together and says, there must be a way to have an organization that's spontaneous. That's what I came up with. If Bhakti Sinatra and Srila Prabhupada are both saying, okay, you gotta have an organization and it better not be a bureaucracy and it better be spontaneous. My conclusion is, if that both of that's gonna be true, then I've got to be able to have an organization that's also spontaneous. So there isn't a choice between is it more spontaneous or is it organized. And I'm really glad that you said that. Now, what I find is that when I bring this up, when I bring up these quotes to devotees, especially to people in leadership positions, but not at all exclusively people in leadership positions. And by the way, I was in a leadership position in ISKCON for 18 years. So I'm not putting down people who are in leadership positions. I hope I never have to be in a leadership position. But what I find is that when you talk to devotees in general, leaders in particular, not all the leaders, but there's an idea that the only way to be organized is not to be spontaneous, that there's this duality. So, thank you. All right, what I want to do now, though, I don't have any idea if I really answered your questions. Or confused you more, or just made you suffer and tortured you. Chinese Sagora comes to class and Romila tortures him. Well, I'm not sure if you're torturing me or I'm torturing you.
He's torturing me.
He's torturing me?
And us.
Between you and us. Well, I'm torturing him back, so we'll all get even.
You tend to ask to deep labyrinth questions that I have to unravel before I can figure it out. All right. This was your homework. If you didn't understand it perfectly, that's fine. You didn't do it perfectly, that's fine. I don't do anything perfectly. I can't think of anything in my life I've ever done perfectly. Okay, so let's say that you're a leader. This was the assignment. You're a leader. You want to, you're either starting an organization and you want to create a certain culture, or you're going to an organization and you want to change the culture. So I asked you to pick one of the four cultures and then decide, what are you going to pay attention to? How are you going to model? What are you going to teach and coach? How are you going to react to a crisis? And what criteria are you going to use for selection, reward, status, and termination? So who would like to go first? Volunteer? If we don't have any volunteers, we'll have to have victims. So. Do we have volunteers? Okay, Krishna Das, you're the
most tired.
You're the most tired. I mean, I had to take a nap between my classes. I was brain dead.
We couldn't.
I did. It was not an option. It was not, am I going to, it was, the question was, am I going to take my exercise walk now or am I going to sleep? And I thought, I'll sleep and then I'll take my exercise walk. So I slept, and then when I got up, Raja Bihari was asking me questions from his Bhakti Shastri class. So I still haven't taken my exercise walk today. So you want to go for clan culture? Okay,
yeah,
what are you going to be? What are you going to pay attention to? Did everybody pick one?
Everybody
yeah.
Pick clan.
All right.
I actually choose Bureau, but I think it ended up being clan.
It ended up being clan. But you ostensibly chose the bureaucracy. Okay, well, we'll just ask, did you choose clan?
No,
you chose clan?
Yeah.
The ladies?
Yeah.
Nima, did you choose clan? Nima, hello. Good morning.
Good afternoon.
It's morning in some time zone. I knew one devotee who told me. He said, I always wake up from Mangal Arati in some place in the world.
Was that true?
He said, when I wake up, it's Mangal Arati somewhere.
That's
fine.
That's
my
there's so many things.
Nimai, what kind of culture did you pick?
You don't choose one.
You don't know what you picked.
Yeah, I
don't. You picked out a half person. Okay. And Jenny, talk about what culture did you pick?
Clan.
Okay. Let's look then first at Manu. Let's see yours first. And then we're going to do Nimai's, and we're going to do everybody else sort of together.
It's kind of confusing what I did.
That's fine.
But I tried answering.
I wasn't expecting, I'm not expecting perfection here. You know the whole reason we're doing an exercise like this.
So we have to think about what we learned yesterday.
Yeah. One of the best ways to solidify learning is to apply it to something. So by asking you to apply your learning to a situation, you're going to remember it better. And by grappling with how hard this is, you're also going to get a sense that it's not just some simple, we're dealing with society, we're dealing with people, it's complicated. Okay, Manu, just give it a, as they say in London, give it a go.
So what they pay attention to?
Yeah, what will you pay attention to in your society if you want to have your bureaucracy?
Well, mainly I said to make sure that the hierarchy is well set and that people don't start jumping around from levels to levels, at least not without the attention of the people at the top.
Okay, good. People stick to their roles.
Yeah.
Excellent. That's excellent. You're going to pay attention to whether or not people stick to their roles. Okay, what are you going to model or teach your coach?
Well, it's kind of the structure is very important that everyone has this part to do.
Okay.
Yet that even though it seems open in the sense that it is controlled, so there's not that much liberty. And the structure ensures the system to work.
Okay, what are you going to model in your own life?
Good example.
Oh.
Of work.
Rule following.
Yeah.
Rule following. A good example of work and responsibility would be what culture? Market.
Mm.
See, in a
market culture, you get the job done, right? You fulfill your responsibilities, you fulfill your commitments, even if you have to break rules or norms to do it. You need to fulfill your commitments. Okay, how do you react to a crisis? What do you do when there's some crisis?
Well, I mean, I use the rules for this.
Okay.
I said I apply the rules.
Apply the rules.
We don't see, okay, so this is what's happening, or maybe this or this, not.
Okay.
Apply the rules.
So when there's a crisis, you look it up in the rule book and you say, okay, what does the rule book say we do in this crisis? By the way, do we do that in this kind?
It's personal.
It's very personal. It's very, very personal. We do not do that. And then it's interesting because we say that we have a bureaucratic culture. What's your number? People often get very upset that we don't do that. Especially when, you know, when there's some crisis. Well, why aren't you following the rules? This is a GBC rule. I mean, I was just dealing with a case like this on the Shastric Advisory Council, where the GBC asked the Shastric Advisory Council to look into something. And one of the members found that there was a GBC rule about it. And as is very typical, nobody on the GBC executive even knew that there was a GBC rule about it. That's very typical. That's it commonly happens. As I say, the GBC themselves aren't into any rules. Most of them.
You need
GBC
lawyers.
Thank God we don't have. Actually trying to kind of develop them. So first of all, the GBC exec themselves had no idea that there was a GBC rule about the particular issue. And the GBCs that were involved in making the decision didn't know there was a GBC rule about the issue. And we discovered some GBC member who had done something regarding this question some years ago. He also didn't know there was a GBC rule about it. So we found that was the first thing, that they didn't even know there was a rule. The second thing was that, did they make the decision according to the rules? The answer is no. They ended up making a decision. They ended up telling us, okay, we've made a decision how to deal with this, and we don't need you guys to do the research anymore. Which is, I think that's the first time they've ever done that. Asked us to do the research, and then just when we were about to get started, said, oh, forget it, we've already made a decision. But the way they made a decision was not, we told them, this is the GBC rule about this instance. Oh, the reaction was, oh, we didn't know there was a rule. That's interesting. And then they made a decision without following the rule. So I see that, I see this in general, that when there's crises, that it's pretty rare, in my experience anyway, for a temple president or a GBC or regional secretary to respond to a crisis by pulling out the rule book. Okay, so that would be your reaction to critical incidents. What criteria would you use for selection, award, status, and termination?
Yes, so to what degree they affect the community or its hierarchy, the influence.
That probably wouldn't be bureaucracy.
Mm-hmm. Who follows the rules?
Who follows the rules and who doesn't follow the rules? That would be your, you know, if you follow the rules well, then
employee of the month.
Employee of the month. But it would be according to how you follow the rules.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be according to your productivity.
Mm-hmm.
If employee of the month was according to productivity, then what culture would that be?
Market.
Are you getting an idea about this?
Yeah.
Suppose I follow the rules, and as a result of following the rules, I lose customers, I don't sell very many products, but I get rewarded for following the rules. What culture is that?
Crazy. Bureaucratic.
It's bureaucratic. If I get rewarded for productivity, if I get rewarded because I sold a lot of products, whether I follow the rules or not, especially if I sold more than the competition.
Market.
It's market. If I get rewarded because my customers were really happy with me, I took good care of my colleagues, and my customers were really happy with me. What kind of culture is that? It's a clan culture. What would I get rewarded for in an autocracy?
Creating a new product.
Creating a new product or a new way to sell the product. think of someone like Vaishasika Prabhu. He was just here recently, right? He's thinking of all sorts of innovative ways to distribute books. I'm not sure if he's come up with it or not, but someone came up with this idea that you just have a book stand and people just put money in the box.
I think he gets the credit for that,
I'm not sure. I don't want to not give him the credit if he should get the credit, and I don't want to give him the credit if it means I'm not giving the credit to the right person. But anyway, somebody came up with it. He's certainly doing it. But I'm talking about the person who invented it.
Everyone credits him.
Okay, so we'll credit him. So to distributing books like that, or he said again, I'm not sure if this comes from him, getting books into motels.
All of it.
He was telling me that. He was talking to me about that, about how they're getting Bhagavad Gita's in motels,
yeah,
and people who become devotees from reading the Bhagavad Gita in a motel.
And a lot of the hotel owners are Indians.
A lot of them, yes. I think he said like 60-70% of the motel owners
in
America are Indian. Okay. So giving people status and recognition for that is an example of an anhocracy. Okay, Nima, I'm going to go to you. Have an anhocracy. What do you pay attention to?
What gets attention?
What gets your attention as a leader? What do you notice?
Well, I'm saying as an answer. What I pay attention to is the things that standing out basically getting attention. But this kind of market. What I pay attention to is that there are people
who are different. Well, people can attract attention in many different ways. What about their, you're saying I pay attention to someone who attracts my attention?
Yeah,
we're going to give you a logic class. we're going to teach you in logic is something called circular reasoning. To what you pay attention, I pay attention to anything that captures my attention. Yes.
That's, what is the definition, right?
Yes, by definition, you pay attention to something that captures your attention. What does somebody have to do to capture your attention if you're a leader who's trying to develop an anhocracy culture? What does a person have to be or do in order to attract your attention?
Cutting edge, new
something innovative.
Could be. Okay, what do you teach and coach, and what do you model? Success.
As quickly from down to up stories with unique twists.
Now, just going quickly from down to up, you might be talking about what?
Market.
No. Talking about efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So quickly from down to up, what are we talking about?
Bureaucracy.
Bureaucracy is interested in efficiency. Bureaucracy is interested in how can I do things in a way with the least cost, remember? Of course, bureaucracies tend to be slow.
Mm-hmm. DMV.
Bureaucracies tend to be extremes. But they do have the idea that going quickly from down to up is a good idea. We need to be efficient. Okay, but in a new way, getting from down to up in a new way. Okay, how do you react to critical events?
According to the time, place, you stand person.
And what criteria do you use for selection, reward, status, and termination?
Yeah. Actually, not so much punishment, I was thinking. And the reward for being ignorant. And just left alone punishment, so.
Well, what would be a reason for punishment or termination in an anhocracy culture?
Staleness, trying to hold on to traditions, or not traditions, form versus form.
There's not much of
it. It's interesting because the brahmanas are and supposed to be in a category where they're not punished by the Kshatriyas. You know them.
Mm.
Brahmanas are supposed to be above punishment. Of course, sometimes Brahmanas have to punish other Brahmanas. But Kshatriyas are not supposed to punish Brahmanas.
Mm.
That's interesting that you had a really hard time coming up with any criteria for punishment in an ad hoc pussy culture. We also seem to have that problem in ISKCON sometimes when we're dealing with an ad hoc pussy culture that we don't want to punish anyone. Yeah.
Well, we're just scared he's a Brahmin.
Yeah, exactly.
He's gonna
bingo. Bingo. Yeah, you got it. Yeah, we're scared that he's a Brahmin and we don't want to punish a Brahmin. Good. That's right.
Leave it to Krishna.
Yeah, leave it up to Krishna to punish them. But there must be some way in which we, there must be some criteria for punishment or termination, even among Brahmins. Well, the karmic punishment is heavier for a Brahmin than a deviant. We have some instances in the Shastra of Brahmin is punishing other Brahmins.
Brahmin is punishing other people.
Lots of instances of that. I mean, we have Balaram acting the role of the Kshatriya who punished Rama Maharshi and Sutta for pride.
Hmm.
I think pride.
Yeah,
I think pride is the criteria. Remember we were talking about the weaknesses of each of the four and the real weakness of the Brahman is pride? I think in an autocracy culture, your punishment and termination is pride. Like Robert wrote in one letter, the poison is personal ambition. This is so cool. This discussion. I'm learning so much. I think it's fun. Because in an autocracy, you don't have a firm hierarchy. You don't have a rigid hierarchical structure in an autocracy. Your hierarchical structure is always changing. And everyone is a leader, which Robert also talked about. He said, you are all they. Don't say they. You all read that quote?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't say they, you are all they. So the real crime in an adhocracy would be to put yourself above others. That would be the crime. To say I'm better than you. You have to be my servant. You have to follow me.
It all makes sense.
I'm better than you. Whoa. It's just too cool. All right. So nobody did a market culture. We'll look at that last thing. All right, let's look at, since you all did clan, I'm just going to ask you for different things. Lalita, what do you pay attention to in a clan culture?
That devotees are cared for. More from your perspective.
Okay, pay attention to how much people are getting cared for.
Yeah. That there's a certain teamwork between leaders.
Okay.
Also that like the norms are nicely communicated.
I'm immediately thinking of a place in this continent that has a very hot clan culture. Chopi is a high clan culture. So they're mostly in Chopi preaching about norms.
Mm-hmm.
They don't preach so much about rules. They preach a lot about norms. They do. But their emphasis, they do have a lot of rules, but that's not their emphasis. Their emphasis is on the norms. But I keep bringing this point up about ISKCON in general, that there's a push on the point on the part of leaders to introduce a lot of rules and to introduce a bureaucratic culture. That's everywhere. That's definitely everywhere. Almost everywhere. There's a push thinking that that's what we're supposed to do. I don't see that anybody likes it. I don't see that the people who push it themselves like it or function under it themselves. With some exceptions. There are some people who really, 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 really like bureaucracy. It's their food. I don't don't see that on the point of leaders. Most leaders are not going to be interested in parents, by definition. But let's say in Chalpati, they heavily promote that they have a clan culture.
Mm-hmm.
I doubt if they have a pure clan culture. But that's a heavily promotion. They're looking at who's taking care of people. It's one of the things they're paying attention to. And they're heavily preaching about this. Okay. Jaya Zagor, what would you model or teach or coach in the clan if you wanted to be a leader who was producing the clan culture?
Take on a piece of the
Okay, so you would model humility and you would teach humility. Okay, very nice. It's giving respect to others. And that's something you see in a place like Chalpati. You know, it's one of the main things that the leaders model, and that's one of the main things that they teach. Tolerance, yes.
One just kind of funny thing about that, I mean, I just noticed that I met some of the people in Juhu, and they said, like, I mean, it was probably just all the people, they say that opposite of Chalpati, they said, oh, that's so bad. I've never really been to either place, but I'm just
they say the people in Chalpati are proud.
Yeah, they're like, but I think it's like, is their neighbors? And
they definitely have a competitive relationship.
Yes, I think so. That's fine.
Oh, I know they have a competitive
maybe the external for others, they might.
It's probably also a little hard for the devotees in Juhu.
No. Okay.
Because, you know, Prabhupada established Juhu. It's one of the most beautiful buildings in ISKCON,
mm-hmm.
sort, or group of buildings. And devotees in ISKCON pay a heck of a lot more attention to Chalpati as a model than they do to Juhu.
Mm-hmm.
Probably a little frustrating for them. Juhu's in a lot nicer neighborhood.
Yeah.
I personally much rather be in the Chalpati temple, but I'd much rather walk around the Juhu neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Chalpati neighborhood is depressing.
I saw some programs from Juhu.
For me personally, I prefer Chalpati just because of the way they treat women there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not allowed to give class in Juhu. I can give class during Bhagavatam time in the temple building on Shastra, but not in the temple room. Do you understand? So at like 7:45 in the morning, I can give a class on the Bhagavatam, or Bhagavad Gita, in the building, but not in the temple room as the official morning class. That pokes the heck out of me. So I tend not to have to go there for that reason. All right, Manukanya, if you want to have a clan culture, how would you react to critical events?
We'll sit down and talk about it as a family and always remember that we are a family and give each other a chance to explain the reasons for our actions.
Okay. And Kumari, what would criteria would you use for selection, reward, status, and termination? I haven't forgotten about you. There were five of you who did clan and there's four topics. I know you.
The way we determine this is, again, based on overall group needs, what's best for the group and for the image of the group. Also,
what kind of specific behaviors would you look at?
Right. So, what we're role modeling, we would look for. We could reward, and rewards are more subtle.
Can you be specific?
Okay.
Huh?
Values.
Honesty.
Values. Okay, you're looking for norms here. You're looking for norms. So you're people who are very honest, people who are very respectful.
Caring, sensitive.
That's what she said.
Caring, sensitive.
Responsible.
Although there's a heavy responsibility factor in which culture? Which culture really puts a high value on responsibility?
Market.
Okay, since none of us did market, let's do that together. So, in a market culture, if we're a leader, what are we going to pay attention to?
Productivity.
How people see you.
What's your image? What else?